Hello, and welcome to the Movie Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll have a spoiler-filled discussion about a movie we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on Avengers Infinity War, and we are almost certainly going to talk about the various films in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
And how this impacts the future of the characters who should have more movies coming up.
Both how it's going to impact those and how the previous ones have impacted this.
Okay.
Because I felt with this, they really did a good job of taking aspects from a lot of the earlier films. And having those things having build up and pay off here. There were a couple of characters we saw in this film that I did not expect to. There were a couple of characters that we saw just for a scene to kind of anchor like Spider-Man's Fred, Ned.
Yes.
To anchor his world into this and move forward. We saw Wong. We saw Pepper Potts. We saw enough of those characters that this really felt kind of fleshed out.
I felt Pepper Potts was either missing a line of dialogue or missing from a scene. Well, she's walking with Tony Stark in the park, and they're talking about, should we start a family? And she's saying, you shouldn't always be prepared for the monster in the closet or the next big bad thing. And then Doctor Strange shows up with basically, there's a monster in the closet, the next big bad thing's about to arrive, and Pepper Potts disappears.
It would have been nice if when he first showed up, it's like, you said no surprises. It's like, this is, I didn't do this, kind of a.
Yeah.
There was some good interplay between Tony Stark and Doctor Strange.
There was.
I thought that played well. Opening the film on the Asgardian ship where we'd left off on Thor Ragnarok.
Just made the ending of Thor Ragnarok even more depressing.
Yes. Yes, it did. Heimdall's choice to send the Hulk to Earth as a messenger was a little odd.
Hulk was closest to him, so I wondered if it was the one he could reach. For a moment, I wondered if he was hoping the path of the Bifrost would catch all three, and would catch Hulk first, and sort of carry him towards Thor, be able to catch him, carry him towards Loki, be able to catch him.
I understand that, other than the why catch Loki. I don't think Heimdall liked Loki that much.
I don't think so either, but I think Loki has really redeemed himself considerably since we first met him.
I would agree with that, and certainly there was some payoff for that in this film.
And, I mean, well, spoiler alert, when Loki died, I was sad. The first time we met Loki, I never thought I would see that be the situation.
Yeah, there was a lot of good characterization that was done over the movies. And it made that scene have a payoff and an emotional resonance that it wouldn't have had if it had happened after, like, in the first Avenger movie.
Well, and I thought the, you really are, I think it was a miserable brother, but the, mm-hmm. You really are a horrible brother line, I felt it could be taken in multiple ways. And because it was not a, you were a miserable brother for letting me be tortured or for choosing my death over protecting where the Tesseract is. It wasn't even for taking the Tesseract off Asgard without telling Thor, which was definitely a possibility.
He had to have expected that. It's
exactly.
Like when Loki had it, it's like, of course you did.
Exactly. It seemed to be more for actually revealing it and handing it over.
Yeah. There was an aspect there where Loki couldn't win.
Yeah. And for me, that just played really well because there were so many ways you could take it.
Mm-hmm.
It was all, what did you want to read into the situation?
Yeah. And I'm curious how well this movie would play to somebody who had not seen any of the previous films. Because at that point, they see two people on a spaceship.
Mm-hmm.
They die.
Mm-hmm.
Who cares? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, if you hadn't seen Thor Ragnarok, where so much healing in the relationship happened.
Yes.
And where you knew Thor and Loki really learned to work together, how would it play? Now, one of the...
It's funny because you can consider Thor Ragnarok as the first buddy gods film.
Yes. Yes. One of the comments in the film that had me puzzling was half the population of Asgard was killed on that ship.
Presumably the other half had died during Ragnarok.
Okay.
But okay. It's unclear if there were survivors of the ship.
I mean, the ship exploded. It was kind of a how could there be?
If they'd somehow gotten off before, I don't
escape
know.
Escape pods. I mean, it
we
just...
never we saw a Valkyrie among the people. I don't think we saw, what was Carl Urban's character?
Oh, he Scourge. Died back, he died.
You're right, he died back there.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think who was kind of left to have seen, because those gods were fallen left, right, and center.
Yeah.
It was interesting, because then we go from there to the Hulk crashing at Doctor Strange's place. That pulls him into the story. We then cut to Tony Stark and Pepper. That pulls them into the story. Strange comes to see them. That starts to unify people. And we're getting a lot of first meetings in this film.
Yeah.
Much like we had gotten in the original Avenger film.
Yeah. Well, and Bruce Banner was really well used in terms of because he hadn't seen people in 2 years, because he missed the Sokovia Accords, he could be used to get information, to find out that Tony Stark and Cap weren't talking to each other.
He provided the need for the exposition.
Yeah.
And also kind of the, I don't care if you're not talking.
Yes.
And there was a different dynamic between Banner and the Hulk this film than we'd ever seen.
That one was fascinating to me.
Particularly when we got almost the Two-Face bit when it was half Banner and they're talking to each other.
Yeah.
So instead of being unaware of what's going on, they're able to communicate to some degree.
Mm-hmm. Well, part of me wondered, okay, did some writer feel like nobody thinks that Bruce can be a hero without the Hulk? And this is our chance to prove Bruce Banner is heroic in his own right. He doesn't have to be the Incredible Hulk to save the day.
It's interesting because Banner in the Hulkbuster armor.
Yes, that was hilarious.
It was hilarious, but also something that we really have kind of never seen in the comics. Because Banner doesn't really have the ability to do kind of something that aggressive, if you will.
Yeah.
Without hulking out.
Well, and that was intriguing because while he was in the Hulkbuster armor, he tried to call up Hulk. Because it was kind of a, I need your tactics, I need your anger, I need your smashing. And there again, Hulk came out just long enough to scream no.
If they can ever, because I think the reason we haven't gotten a solo Hulk film is because I think Universal would still have to be the one to distribute it or something.
Oh, interesting.
If they can ever get those rights kind of fully squared away, or whatever else is holding it up, because who knows, maybe it's something else. It would be fun to see a solo Hulk film that is still a buddy cop sort of show in terms of getting Banner and the Hulk to have a working relationship such. I mean, imagine if a film opened up with the Hulk just tearing through some installation, fully guarded, you know, a military outpost and maybe in some other country, whatever, or an AIM, advanced idea mechanics thing. And he's just ripping through it, left, right, and center, gets to where this big device is, shrinks down, Banner goes, does his thing, Hulk's out again, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just being able to, or the Hulk gets to a door he can't smash through, shrinks down, Banner, you know, cracks the code, well, what have you.
It seems to me that back in the old Hulk TV show, Bruce Banner had that journal he was constantly writing in because he was trying to figure out, I guess, a serum to help him either control the hulking or stop the hulking.
He was trying to cure himself.
Yeah. And I think it would be interesting to go back to that journal concept, but instead of looking for the cure, be using the journal as a means to communicate between Banner and Hulk.
Yeah. Yeah. We've seen that sort of idea used elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
That would work, but it almost has to be in a solo Hulk film to have the time to devote to that.
Yes.
So, I think Ruffalo's doing a great job with the character.
Yeah,
he got a good chance to shine. I can't help if think of part of why we didn't get much Hulk this film was because he was used a lot in the beginning. But also, you had, I was counting during the credits, I'm going to say between the Avengers, the Guardians of the Galaxy, and the couple of solo heroes, Spider-Man, Doctor Strange, you had nearly 20 heroes in this film.
Yeah.
And you could tell some of that by the fact that they had to strategically divide them into at least three different groups or whatever. Yes,
and yet they kept them all pretty consistently active, etc. There were very few times where I said, hey, wait a sec, I'd like to know what's happening meanwhile back on the ranch.
There was one time, and we cut to it in the very next scene, and I figured we would, where we cut to Thor, Rocket, and Groot.
Mm.
But in the scene prior to that, I'm like, you know, where did we leave them again?
Yeah.
Because they had headed off to go get the axe.
Mm-hmm.
Which, great use of Peter Dinklage.
Yes. Well, and Groot was phenomenal in that sequence.
Yes. Some very good stuff with Groot in mm-hmm. this.
And really, we did minimal use of Groot's tree expanding. Like one of the movies where Groot created the shelter.
Right.
And that kind of thing.
But it's one of those things with this film, you had Groot as a CG character, you had Rocket,
mm-hmm.
you had the Hulk, you had Thanos. I mean, you get to the point where the amount of CG just for the characters walking around is substantial.
Yeah.
Plus all of the effects for the creatures, the spaceships, etc.
Yeah.
This had to keep an army of special effects engineers of a variety of types.
Well, I was going to say you had three people flying around because you had Falcon and Warmonger as well as Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while, I was getting tripped up by having Falcon and Warmonger flying around again. War Machine, thank you.
It's Iron Monger was the one Iron Man fought in Iron Man 2.
There you go, sorry.
Although Warmonger's probably going to be a character if it isn't already.
Sorry.
But yeah, it was one of those where at times it was a little hard to keep track of all the characters because they were so many, particularly in the Wakandan fight scene.
Yeah.
And while there were fewer on the Titan fight scene, there was a time or two they'd cut between the two fights. And it's like, oh, wait, I guess we flipped planets now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there was one point on Titan where I'm like, okay, so Spider-Man grabbed hold of Mantis and got her somewhere safe. Who else did he grab and say, you're safe? Sorry, forgot your name, too.
He got Dax, and then he forgot Star-Lord's name.
Because I'm like, I'm trying to think who's in play, who's not in play, because they're webbed.
Well, if you think about it, they took the Avengers into like two or three different groups.
Mm-hmm.
Same with the Guardians, although different groups. And there was a lot in play in this film.
What? And I found it interesting that, like, Bruce Banner got sent one direction to kind of introduce the problem to a group of characters. Thor got sent a different direction mm-hmm. to introduce the problem to a group of characters. They're both basically gathering allies and fighting the battle on two different fronts.
Yes. And really unaware that the other team is even in the fight.
Yeah. I do think it should have been Infinity Battle, not War. We may have lost the battle. I don't think we've lost the war.
Fair point. At one point, it was going to be a two-parter. And given the way this ended,
I think it was a two-parter.
I think it was a two-parter. I just don't know when the second part is.
Yeah.
Because at the very end, what they teased was the Captain Marvel film.
Oh, that's interesting. I wondered what that was about. That logo.
Yeah.
See, I
want to say that with the communication device sending that out, it had a little like pixelized LED display. And I'm like, this is the best technology they had? Come on.
Yeah. Well, the Wakandans didn't, you know, hook him up.
Or Stark.
Yeah. Because I was looking at that going, well, that doesn't scream we're sending any of the plot into S.H.I.E.L.D. Will any of the half the population disappeared be in S.H.I.E.L.D. for their final half season?
Almost how could it not?
Because I mean, it seems like it.
If literally half the group, half the people are gone. But the problem with doing that is, statistically speaking, half the key agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. should be gone.
Yeah.
And if you look at where we left the film, by my count, we had one Guardian of the Galaxy, and that was Rocket.
Groot disappeared. Drax disappeared.
Mantis.
Mantis disappeared. Gamora's dead. Star-Lord disappeared, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the ones with Tony went.
Yeah.
Tony was left by himself because he lost them, Strange, and Spider-Man. He was only left with Nebula.
Yeah.
And we lost, was it Falcon?
Yeah.
And Vision was killed.
Mm-hmm. We lost T'Challa.
T'Challa, yeah, I was surprised by that. Trying to think who else we lost there on Earth. It was a fair number.
Well, see, the Infinity Gauntlet as a non-comic book reader intrigued me in a few ways. First of all, you get the Soul Stone, but it doesn't seem to give a character who came across rather soulless either a soul or access to his soul.
It works a little differently than that, in so much as it allows you, and I'm thinking back, because the Infinity Gauntlet series was a 6-issue miniseries that Jim Starlin did. I don't know if you noticed, about halfway through the credits, there was a very special thanks to, or they'd like to acknowledge the contributions of Jim Starlin. They took his plot line, and here's how it would be in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Okay.
Complete with half the people getting killed. Okay. Of course, there was an end to the story with not leaving everybody half dead or half the people dead.
Yeah.
But at that point, the Soul Gem allowed for, I think, people to get to like an astral plane kind of a thing, or interact with dead souls, stuff like that. It's not that it gives you one if you're missing one, metaphorically.
Yeah.
Although you could argue it did in the case of the Vision. Actually, that was the mind.
That was the mind stone. Yeah, yeah, which I found fascinating too.
Well, but there was a lot of things with the Infinity Gems, as they were called back then in the comics, and the Infinity Stones here, although they're now stones, they've revamped themselves in the comics and changed the colors and powers. And I'm behind on my reading, so I'm not sure what they are. But that were a little loosely defined in the comics. You have space, you can control all of space. You have time, you can control all of time. You have reality, you can control all of reality. Well, isn't there a little overlap there?
Yeah.
And then the mind, the soul, and then power is just kind of ambiguous. If you've got power, do you need the others?
One of the things that occurred to me as it went with the, don't worry, you'll see Thanos again, was kind of a, okay, if I were creating this gauntlet for the series of characters based on the powers we've set into these stones and into this gauntlet, because it can control space, time, reality, or perception of reality, etc., I think the gauntlet gives Thanos what Thanos thinks he wants. So I'm wondering if it basically created two divergent, like parallel universes.
It split the universe in half, and half stayed in one, half stayed in the other.
Yeah.
Certainly possible.
Which still gives you the possibility for a Black Panther movie where he suddenly realizes he's in a universe that just had the opposite effect. So where he was
from
reaching,
his standpoint, Cap and the others were lost.
Yes. He was reaching for the head of the bodyguards and he disappeared from what we saw. But now we wind back and we see it from his perspective and she's the one who disappeared.
What I would have been tempted to do if that was the take I was going to do in a film of a man, it'd be hard to pull off. At that point, start with a shot where you've got these characters, and as they were kind of rippling away or whatever, have some of the people ripple one way, the other people ripple the other, and now you've got a split screen sort of situation.
Yeah.
Whereas an audience, we realize what's happening. Their point of view, they're looking around, it's like, you know, where did they go? The problem is, how do you tell that story simultaneously?
Yeah.
Because I think once you got that shot and people are like, they're gone, then you could cut to back and forth with a different color palette or some such.
Well, I just think it would be a fascinating concept if you now had two divergent realities in which if each of them can get the Infinity Gauntlet from Thanos,
they could stitch it together?
Yeah.
The problem with that is what we saw indicates that's not the case. I like the idea, but everybody seemed to realize they were dying as they discorporated.
That something was wrong was the way Spidey said. I don't feel right. Something's wrong.
But he realized as he was, as his arm was going kind of a thing.
Yeah.
That he was dying and he'd seen a few of the others. And that was the other thing, is it was a delayed effect.
Yeah. It was like a blowing on the wind.
Well, but it wasn't from like a point out.
Yeah.
Because in the end credit scene, when we had the car and the helicopter, and then people in the street start going.
Mm-hmm.
It's clearly not...
Well, but when Thanos explained his theory, he said it should be random.
The people it picks should be random.
Mm-hmm.
The impact of the effect either should happen everywhere all at once, or from the point rippling out, at which point those closest to the epicenter go first and those later. And that clearly wasn't the case.
Mm-hmm.
But it does imply a certain higher power picking and choosing.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, how does it know, you know, what side of the coin came up for each character?
Well, and that's where I went back to the Infinity Gauntlet seemed to have a little bit of a mind of its own. It had the Mind Stone, it had the Soul Stone, etc. So I'm curious what comes next with what they set up.
Well, and of course, they knew the movie was coming out, so Marvel's been telling similar-ish stories of late. And I think one of the concepts teased there was it's a gauntlet. Was it the left hand or the right hand? These things come in pairs.
Yeah.
So what's going on in that respect?
It was the left hand. I'm trying to think which hand we saw at the forge when we saw either the mold or
I think we saw the mold for the hand.
Yeah.
I was surprised how the movie ended because it ended on such a down note.
Mm-hmm.
You would think it was a DC film.
Yeah. I was surprised by the ending. I was disappointed in Gamora's death because I agreed with her. I don't believe Thanos loved her, so I don't believe he earned the Soul Stone.
I think it was his version of love, so I think he did as much as he could and in his way.
Okay.
So I thought that was interesting. What I found fascinating with that scene was the person who was the guide on the journey was the Red Skull from the Captain America film.
I knew he was familiar.
And that goes back to one of the earlier films setting this kind of stuff up.
Yeah.
Because he'd been going after the Soul Gem. We'd even seen that castle or whatever, I think, back in that film. So it really... And even when the movie was starting and we got the Marvel Studios and the IO was replaced with a 10,
mm-hmm.
there was a certain... This has been a film 10 years in the making.
Yeah.
That I'm kind of thinking if we were to go back through the films, this set that up, you know,
mm-hmm.
which films were more critical than others in some respects? Because obviously I think you need, you know, the Captain America first film. Do you need all three Iron Man films? Could you have glossed over some of it? I don't know.
Yeah.
There was a lot coming to play here. And they brought in the New York we've come to know. We brought in Wakanda, the Sanctum, the Guardian stuff, Nowhere. What was left of the Asgardians.
They did well with Bucky.
They did. I thought that was good. There were a few other characters that they had given kind of token mention to. Hawkeye not being around, they addressed and they had set up in one of the previous films. But it makes me wonder, was the actor just frustrated he wasn't getting more screen time or what?
Yeah.
Because I think even those that didn't get a ton of screen time in this film, every character seemed to get their moment.
Yeah.
There was some good stuff with the Vision and Scarlet Witch. I felt there was some good stuff with pretty much each of the different Guardians. Some a little bit more than others. I mean, I don't think Drax really got any pivotal, oh my God, moments, but he had his character moments here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And everything from when we first see the Guardian ship and the music had already kicked in to get that sensibility.
Yeah.
For the most part, I think they understood the sensibility of the different films and pulled that in. The one place I would say I don't think they did a great job on that was with the Wakandian tech. That seemed to be more holograms this time.
Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah.
The nanite type stuff.
Yeah.
But then that brings up Stark's armor.
Yeah.
Which I'm going to categorize as cool tech. Because I can imagine the writers are sitting around thinking, it would be cool if Iron Man did this at this point.
Yeah.
Well, this happens. Wouldn't it be cool if?
Yeah.
Because we didn't get him talking as much to the armor this time.
No, we didn't.
And there seemed to be a lot more need for it. Because he was having it reconfigure on the fly.
Yeah. Though the suit that he had kind of standing by for Spider-Man was pretty cool.
And the one we saw at the end of Homecoming.
Yes.
So that had already been set up and was well used. And his comment of it's so intuitive also explained how Tony could be using his stuff and Banner, the Hulkbuster one.
Yeah.
And it implies that the moving day stuff from Spider-Man Homecoming is what got the Banner, the Hulkbuster one, to where they could pull it out of storage or whatever. Although a line of dialogue, having Jon Favreau do Happy for just the scene it would take if I just put it in storage.
Yeah.
Would have been funny. It was a lot of characters, and that always can make for a dicey story. But the fact that there was payoff on things set up in previous films helped alleviate that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a very clear through line of Thanos is coming. Let's go, you know, take care of him.
Well, and they kept the unique voice of each character.
Yeah.
Which with that many characters is hard to do.
Well, and they also brought in iconic moments from the comics, even if they played out differently. What kicked off one of the major storylines, and I think it was Thanos coming back to Earth, was Nova crash landing in New York.
Mm.
With the Thanos is coming kind of a thing. It may have been a different threat, but maybe it was the Phoenix or something. But the same kind of moment as the Hulk crashing down. So it's clear that they are aware of what's going on with Marvel. They're obviously in communications back and forth in both directions. But they're not, while they're adapting stories, they're not just doing a straight soulless adaptation.
Yeah.
Because I've seen a lot of things where it's beat for beat. Well, this is the next story thing they told. We're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little more than going through the motions at times, whereas here they're incorporating it and having some fun with it.
Well, in the ones that go beat for beat, it's so by the numbers what you've read, if you read the original, that there's no whimsy, there's no surprise. You turn the page going, and I read that already, just in Old English versus Modern English.
Or this is the Super Sentai show and the Power Rangers are following an exact, if somewhat abbreviated, version or something.
Yeah.
And having the Infinity Gauntlet storyline played out in live action with the then current characters of the comics versus the now current characters of the films, you've got to make a couple of changes here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But it allows for them to be the same story yet be different stories at the same time. In other words, I think what they're doing with the Marvel Cinematic Universe is very much akin to what the Marvel comic book universe, how it evolved, how it grew over time. They've captured the right aspects of that and have made their own thing there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I think DC's done on the comic shows, haven't done on the movies.
Yeah.
It feels a little less organic there.
Yeah.
But I was surprised by just how much happened in this film.
Yeah.
And it was, I think, the most impressive of the Marvel films. I would argue up until the end, it was probably becoming one of my favorites. But when it ended where it ended,
if it had ended with Cap saying, we may have lost the battle, but we haven't lost the war.
Something.
I'd have been more okay. Well, because of his World War II background.
Well, and I think that would have worked. But instead of the what happened, they're all just kind of sitting there stunned.
Yeah.
And if somebody else, and I don't know who would have been the right one, and it might have been, and this would have been funny to do.
Bucky vanished.
Yeah, I guess Bucky was one of them. But if Banner, still in the Hulkbuster armor, hulked out just enough, turned green, and had the Hulk say, we lost.
Mm.
Then have Cap do the we lost the battle, not the war.
Yeah.
We can come back from this.
Yeah.
You know, with the how, I don't know. But I can't imagine they go too much further in this state of the universe. Because, I mean, there's another Spider-Man film on the horizon.
Yeah.
And it's Sony's character to that respect. So he's obviously going to be there. But it's, I don't know. It was a very dramatic moment to end on. But not one such that having no next film, I mean, the Thanos will return. It's like, well, yeah, they got to go defeat him. We didn't get that this film. We were expecting that this film.
Yeah.
And it made it a little unfulfilling, if dramatic. I don't know where to go next.
Yeah. I don't like the unfulfilled feeling. I don't like these movies ending on the sensation of 1,000 funerals.
It reminded me of, I guess, Empire Strikes Back, where they've lost Han Solo. We're incomplete. We've got to go do something, but what?
Yeah.
And I know that they've tried having various, either allusions or callbacks to the Star Wars films for various reasons, which I don't understand. Do your own thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why so many people during Phase 2 were losing hands.
Yeah.
Well, that happened to various characters in Star Wars, so let's honor it that way or whatever. It's like, why? I would be able to take the there's more to come. You know, it was like in the Back to the Future Part 2. Marty is stranded with the what do I do now? And then they go, hey, to be continued in the next film.
Yeah.
We've got more. We've made more. Just give us a little time to get it done.
Yeah.
Okay. But it could be 2 years before we get back to where this picks up. Because my understanding of the Captain Marvel film is it may be a prequel.
Well, and what about the Ant-Man and Wasp?
I'm assuming it's either set before or concurrent with this.
Interesting.
Or ambiguously so.
Yeah.
But that's going to be another one as to, again, how does it play out? This is one that as the number of movies continues, it's harder to keep a continuity of what happened when and what's going on with each character.
Yeah.
I don't think they've really flown in the face of continuity and violated stuff that they've established, although they very well may have. But I am going to be curious with Ant-Man and Wasp of, at the end of the movie, do we see half the people fade out or something?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It looks like that'll be a fun film. It was a shame they weren't here. Don't know that they were necessarily needed here. And it was a little surprising that there wasn't a, I know these people bowed out of doing this stuff, but we got to call everybody in.
They were mentioned. Ant-Man was.
Ant-Man was mentioned at the same time as Hawkeye as they worked a deal. They're kind of out.
That's right.
But to me, this is a bring everybody in sort of situation.
Yeah. Well, I thought one of the lines that was priceless was when they were coming into Wakanda and the head of the bodyguards was saying, I know we talked about opening Wakanda, but this is not what I had in mind.
Well, I'm like, what did you expect? Well, maybe a Starbucks.
Yes.
That was funny.
Yes.
And that's where they seem to get the tone and style.
Yeah.
I didn't catch who directed this. And I know there were a couple of different executive producers and such, but they seem to, like I said, for the most part, get the style and sensibility of the different movies and characters and make it into a cohesive thing.
Yeah.
Which was impressive. It was a fun film.
Mm-hmm.
It had some really good action stuff. It had some good dramatic moments, but I would have tried to have found a better note to end on.
I definitely agree.
Because I was certainly sitting there as the credits are rolling of, you better have something good mid and post credits.
Me too.
And I felt what they had at the end with Nick Fury and Maria Hill was not what I needed.
I felt it hadn't been worth waiting for.
When they both fell victim to the half die.
Yeah.
That I think was the, and all hope is lost sort of moment, is what they were trying to go for.
Mm-hmm.
And then the at first I didn't realize he'd actually pushed the button on the device.
Yeah.
And then when it fell face up so we could easily see sending, and I'm like, damn, this is slow tech.
Yeah.
And of course I recognized the Captain Marvel colors and whatnot, and I knew the movie was coming, but it was not the upbeat note that I think the movie needed.
No. I mean, Black Panther ending on, we can help others. We can do something positive for the world instead of only focusing within our borders. That was such a positive ending.
It also is another line that they missed. I know where we can go. They're flying in. It's like, what can a bunch of farmers do to help us right before they go through?
Yes, that would have been nice.
You know, it would have been a nice callback to the other film. It would have.
Yeah, it would have.
So, there were a few things they could have done to punch it up a little bit more in terms of the story and the script, but just juggling that many actors, that many characters, that many different plot lines that were interwoven, and doing a good job of all of that.
Well, but talking about characters that didn't have a lot of screen time but were used well, the Gorilla King.
Yes, he was used well. This mm-hmm. felt like a good follow-on to the Black Panther film.
Yeah. I felt that T'Challa's sister, again, was missing a line of dialogue or something. Well, she was working on getting the Mind Stone out of Vision. Mm-hmm. She went over to her machine. She was clearly frustrated. What's going on? She's punching buttons. She's playing with the hologram. And then she kind of taps it back into his head, apparently, and runs off. And it's not clear. Has she given up? What's happening? I know her lab had been attacked.
That was unclear. That you're right. They could have done a little better there. I also think knowing her fate at the end.
Yeah.
Is and important.
That's part of why I actually went for my divided reality theory, because I was hoping she survived and we now actually have a member of the royal family in each reality to lead Wakanda.
I would have liked for her to have gone out to where the rest of the fighting was and kind of had regrouped with them at the end. And I mean, even if it was just, you know, we lost so-and-so, we lost so-and-so, we lost so-and-so, we lost the Black Panther. And she's like, no, you didn't.
Yes.
And the suit comes on. That would have been interesting.
Yeah. Bucky's arm was very reminiscent of the cousin's Black Panther suit from the previous movie. The same black and gold colors.
Interesting.
I mean, I know it's all Wakanda technology, etc., but I thought it was interesting it had such a similar look.
Yeah. I was thinking Cap's shield would have been a little cooler.
Yeah.
We never really got a...
We had little tiny pointed shields that covered his arms and could be used.
They were somewhere between glorified boxing gloves and shields.
I was going to say they were almost like arrowheads or spears on the tip of a shield.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just, we never got... I mean, he used them in the battle, but we never got kind of a showcase moment for them.
Yeah.
And they were supposed to be kind of, I think, reminiscent to what Cap was using for a while in the comics, which was that sort of a two-part shield.
I also would have liked for, especially since the Wakandans supplied those, for that and a few of the other things they supplied our heroes to have the kinetic energy effect that the Black Panther suit had from the Black Panther movie.
I would think if this had been a two-parter, they had time to regroup and then fight, we would have gotten that in the second part.
Mm.
Shuri would have. Like, we didn't do so good the first time. I can enhance.
Yeah.
But, again, not knowing when and if Thanos... Well, I mean, we know Thanos returns. They've told us that. But when and how and whatnot.
Yeah.
Because this could have, and I feel almost should have been, the end cap to a 10-year movie run, where they come out victorious, and then use Ant-Man and Wasp as kind of the start of a new cycle or some such.
I wish I could remember where this falls in terms of Joss Whedon leaving his advisory position.
They did this without.
Yeah.
And in some respects, I think that definitely shows. I think it would have had a little bit more humor if he'd been in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it would have ended on such a down note.
That's what I was thinking.
But it's kind of hard to say.
Well, just thinking back to Firefly, where there's, I mean, even when we're down, even when we think we're defeated, we can crack a joke to make it seem more optimistic and we think we're going to be victorious.
Even if it's just as simple as the crew getting around the dinner table and reminiscing or whatever about the loss or coming together as a family and regrouping.
Yeah.
That was the moment we were missing.
Yeah.
And...
Well, one of the things I noticed is nobody ever actually asked Bruce Banner where he'd been for 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a very full movie. I'm sure a lot ended up on the cutting room floor, and it was a very full 2 hours at that, but not a single line. I mean, there was
a line of we haven't caught up in a while and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I figure they either assume he was hiding or whatever, but nobody ever asked.
Yeah.
How he knew about Thanos or whatnot. Presumably it was happening off screen at the Sanctum.
Yeah.
But you've only got so much time.
Yeah, exactly.
Even if it had been a tell us what you know and we just got like a 15 second, 20 second, 30 second montage of the highlights of, you know, Thor Ragnarok or something.
Well, even if before we were flying into Wakanda, right before the line about to Cap of, are you sure about these coordinates? It was kind of a, Bruce, we've enjoyed the story about outer space, but here at Terra Firma, we're about to crash.
Well, and even when he first meets up with the Avengers and such, and there's the comment about, oh, it's awkward with him and Nat, never touched on again.
Yeah.
But that comes down to there's only so much time.
Yeah.
So you got to figure out a way to handle some of that, you know, and you would almost had to have done it at the expense of some other character moment somewhere.
Yeah, sadly.
But I don't think that would have been the wrong choice.
Yeah.
I think there were a few comedic moments that could have been dropped in order to give a little bit more plot filler, or not filler, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
On some of this stuff. I mean, I know there was a time with the DC films, the Batman movies and whatnot, where it's like, geez, you've got six main characters. Everyone's got to have a time to walk on screen, have a good line or two and walk off. Just right there, you've taken so much time off the top. Oh, these are new villains. We got to get their origins. That's another 10, 15 minutes per character just off the top.
Mm-hmm.
And you wind up with no room for a plot.
Yeah.
Here, we didn't have to go give anybody an origin or whatnot. And we didn't really have any new players in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Which in and of itself is a little surprising. A lot of other movies have brought one or two new people in.
True.
So the fact that they got as much story as they did as quickly as they did.
Well, and interestingly enough, we did manage to have a fight scene within the heroes.
Yes.
Which seems to be one of the hallmarks of Avengers movies.
Unfortunately, it does.
But I mean, I thought it was kind of funny. They played it, they ended it with a sense of humor. And they played it off pretty well. I was like, okay, for once, I'm not upset that you felt the need to have the heroes fight just to prove you can have your heroes fight.
I would have liked to have had somebody comment of, you know, people are going in all hot and ready to fight, so they see somebody and they fight them. What do you expect?
Mm.
It's an occupational hazard, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad I went into the film without having had it spoiled.
Same here.
That would have definitely changed my viewing of it substantially. If I had known how it ended going in.
Yeah.
And it was...
If I'd known how it ended going in, I'd have waited 2 years to watch it.
I certainly would have waited for the Blu-ray.
Well, I would have wanted to wait until the next one was coming out and seen them closer together.
I can understand that. And I can see where at some point we need to find the time to kind of go back through all the films. And we talked as we were going at the end of, I guess, Black Panther... about rating the films, yeah. And at some point, and it may be leading up to that next film that furthers this whole storyline, that we go through and kind of do that, watch it. Okay, this is obviously our benchmark. Next, up, down, kind of get them into the rating that way. But just, I know I'm starting to conflate the various later two Captain America movies in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting hard for me to remember, okay, when did Bucky first show versus this versus that?
Yeah.
And just getting some of that clarified would be helpful. But they've built a fairly full universe just in the movies. Plus, again, we've got the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show.
Yeah.
You know, it would have been interesting if they'd actually pulled in an Inhuman or two.
Yeah, it would.
But...
Well, when they realized they needed all hands on deck in Wakanda, if they'd put the word out to S.H.I.E.L.D. of... We know the Inhuman Registry was made. Can you put the word out to them? Come to Wakanda if you're willing to fight.
I don't think there was the time for that, and I certainly didn't get the sense that they were looking for more help.
True.
They should have been.
They should have been.
And that was the weird part. Even, I mean, the Avengers back before Cap and company walk in the door should have been doing that.
Yeah.
So it was good, but... Didn't like the note it ended on, and I want to know when to expect this storyline to not just inch forward, but to actually move forward at full pace.
Yeah, I agree.
So anything else?
I think we're good.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.